Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You're talking about great people that are great professionals. That's Purdy Insurance. They are going to find you the right insurance so you're covered, best price because it fits your budget. And they'll update policies, and if you ever need the insurance, they go to work as if it happened to them because customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance. They're the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Talk about the best in the business. Great product lines. Tremendous staff. Their sales staff is tremendous there. And the service department, second to none. Take care of the life of that vehicle. Routine maintenance, anything beyond that, they've got it. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call of the day in overtime. A controversial game winner for the Vikings.
Kirk takes the snap. Looks right, fade left, end zone, and it is caught! Touchdown! Oh, what a beautiful throw! Bonjour, San Francisco, and au revoir, New Orleans Saints!
Wow, some tricky French there at the end. The Vikings win it. Big win for Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. They get the Niners next. Seattle gets Green Bay next. Next up for Bucknell, Navy. That'll be Wednesday night, 7 o'clock in Soica. Then it'll be Holy Cross Saturday coming up at 2. And with that, we bring in the outstanding basketball coach at Bucknell, Nathan Davis. Happy New Year, Nathan. Welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show again.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you as well.
All right, so you're off to a good start in the Patriot. What kind of job did the non-conference do to set up the start to conference play for you?
Well, I think the thing it does, because we played some really good teams, was it exposes all your flaws. So we're at the point now where we aren't finding out what we need to work on. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff we still need to work on, but there's nothing. We've got a chance to really get some of the flaws exposed and get to work on those so that hopefully we can be better moving forward.
Nine guys are playing 12 minutes or better for you right now. Are you comfortable with the rotation you're in?
We're getting there. I'm still trying to figure out some combinations. The reality is in the last 2 years we've lost four first-team all-conference players and a second team that are starting at Kentucky for the most part right now.
Yeah, other than that.
So we have some talented guys, but figuring out roles and how really to best use them, it's taking some time, and I think we've gotten closer and we're playing better, but it's still not settled yet.
When you look at Jimmy Sotos running the team for you, and he's off to a good start with 62 assists, so he's averaging over 4 assists per game, but he's got the 46 turnovers. So what are the pluses and minuses to his game right now, and are some of those turnovers his, or are some of those turnovers in part because somebody's not in the right place?
We know, I think a lot of it is indicative of where our team is at the time, is that across the board, one of our issues is that at times we're just a little too careless. We can make great plays, but we get a little careless and don't lock in on certain possessions and make mistakes we just don't need to make. And I think it's not just him. It's been a little bit of everybody. Fortunately, this last game on Saturday, we didn't have that issue. I think we only had one or two of those as a group, and he had one of them. But it's just making solid plays over and over again across the board is what we need to do.
The three-point line, across the country, I believe I've seen the number, Nathan, at about 34.5%, which is about what your number is, and so that's about what your defensive number is. Has the extra 15 inches out top and on the wings made any difference to you in how the game is played?
You know, I do think it creates more space. I think as guys get more used to the distance and coming up, the percentage is going to go way up, and they'll be back to where it was really about a year ago. Across the board, to leaving open the floor more. So I do think in the long run it's going to help. I do think at the moment, though, guys have grown up their whole lives shooting it from, you know, a foot closer, which can be a difference.
Right.
And then you have the corner, and there's not as much room. So I know how many times you've seen a guy stepping out of bounds, just getting used to that footwork, you got to change up. But as far as the way we're trying to play and the way that the teams are trying to defend us, I haven't noticed a whole lot of difference. It's just that you got to get used to that distance more.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up it briefly in one of the sentences. That's something that's really surprised me this year. I thought, at least in the first month of the season, you'd see more guys step out of bounds because
right.
the line is so close to the corner. Now, in my experience in the games I've done, I only did one Bucknell game this year. I've only seen it happen, I think, once or twice all season. So that part actually has pleasantly surprised me.
Yeah, you know, and I'll be honest, I've seen the officials miss it a couple times.
Oh, yeah, that happens,
but,
yeah.
But, no, I think that I think it's actually more affecting guys as far as their shot, because you're supposed to be able to step in a corner, and now you kind of have to step to the side. So I think it's changing rhythm on some jump shots out of the corner.
What's made Avi Toomer an effective three-point shooter? Because he is a guy that has not struggled with this thing. He's up over like near 47%.
Well, I think it starts with taking good ones. I think he's been selective. The ones he's taken hasn't forced a lot of them, which is a big part of it. And he's always been a quality three-point shooter for us. It's just with the other guys we had on the floor, he wasn't going to take as many of them. And so I think he's just embraced the opportunity and run with it.
How have you felt about your two-point game? I mean, your two-point field goal percentage.
It's not very good.
Yeah.
No other way around.
And I'm surprised by that based on a couple of guys that you have.
Yeah, I think that for whatever reason, I mean, the other day when we were playing Lafayette, we were 7 of 23 in the first half from 2. And that's why we were losing in a lot of respects. We'd had some defensive breakdowns, but really it was because we were missing layups. And whatever it is, we got to get it fixed. We got to do a better job of not worrying about getting hit. We got to fit in the box and things like that. That's been a problem for us so far this year, and it's part of why our scoring has been down a little bit.
How's Paul Newman developed for you inside? Where have been a couple of areas where you feel like he's advanced, or where are a couple of areas where you feel like he's plateaued?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing for him, and you can say this again, it goes across the board, is when you have the guys we've had over the last few years, you didn't always have to be the man every day. And so just getting that consistency day in, day out, and I really think here in the last two games, Paul really has stepped up his game. And he's had two really good games in a row for us. He's been focused defensively, and if he continues to do that, he'll get a chance to score more and do those other things as well. So, again, like you talked about Jimmy Sotos and the turnovers, I think that it's Paul's representative of the whole team. It's just the consistency you got to have day in, day out, possession in, possession out. You're being counted on now, so you can't take plays off.
Yeah, I mentioned that the two-point percentage was just over 46% with your two-point percentage. Has it afforded you enough chances, though, to get to the line? Because your free throw percentage is awesome.
No, I think that it's been a problem. And part of why we've gone through scoring droughts is because we have missed some layups, and then we don't get the free throw line. And so if we get a stretch where we're not making the threes, all of a sudden you go from a couple possessions in a row where you don't score, it can go to 4 or 5. And so I think that a big thing for us is we've got to do a better job around the basket of finishing and making sure that we don't take bad ones either, kick it out when people rotate.
Something else that's also happened once you've gotten the conference play, you have not allowed anybody to clear more than 66 points in the opening two games. So how much more buttoned down is your defense now than it was, say, even about 3-4 weeks ago?
Yeah, well, I think that, and it starts with me, I think that I didn't do as good a job as I have. I think I got a little ahead of ourselves, and we got away from some fundamental things in the non-conference that we should have been working on and worrying too much about who we were playing as opposed to what we were doing. And really, when we got into exams and coming out of that, we tried to go back and really buckle down on what we were doing as far as fundamentally defensively. But I do think a big thing has been in the last, even against LaSalle, we gave up 71 points, which was a point per possession. We had 19 points off turnovers that led directly to baskets and transition and things like that. So we had done, we definitely guarded them really well too. So coming out of that game, we were playing much better. I thought we were more consistent in the last two games. I think we've defended well and given us a chance to win games.
All right, so now you get the Navy coming in here. Navy's off to a 1-1 start in the league at this point. What do you like about Ed's team, and what concerns you about Ed's team?
Well, I think that they play with a great discipline. I think they compete every night. They're going to play hard. They're going to play physical, which is always a challenge. I think that the big thing for us will be to be consistent defensively again. Make them take some tough twos. Not let them get to the rim. You got to rebound well, and then they play sound defense. They play man-to-man, and they play like a 2-3 match, and they're pretty good at both of them. And so making sure that we recognize what it is and how we want to attack it so that we can get the shots we need to get will be big for us.
You mentioned about the ability to concentrate on certain elements. You said maybe early on you didn't concentrate on a couple of things. Now you've been able to. Has the fact that they have not been in school for a period of time allowed you to, in a basketball-only setting, to really lock in on some issues?
Well, yeah, I think that I think it's different here in a lot of places, and especially in the fall, your practice times are so different. There'll be days we practice at 4:30. There'll be days we don't start till 8, and you don't have as much time. When you get into this period here where you're out of school and there's no one around, you kind of get a set schedule with film, with practice, and all that stuff. It is easier to focus on those things, and obviously guys are here because they want a great education, but the school's hard. They're not taking basketball weaving. They're taking engineering and physics.
Yeah.
What have you? That's going to take time. So I do think that it is an important time here over the last few weeks to be able to really focus on ourselves, focus on our team, and try to improve as much as possible.
So you're saying, Nathan, I couldn't get into school there?
No. I couldn't get into school here. and if they did take me, I wouldn't have made it.
You know, I've been looking at each other like, okay, why are we here?
Yeah, very much so.
No, that's why I've always given your players so much credit, because the time management part with the majors they have to take and the fact that they excel so well on the basketball court, I've always found it to be phenomenal, because Bucknell's is a high-end academic institution that plays high-end basketball. You guys have done a great job with this over the years, everybody from Pat all the way through with everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. Certainly we have guys that take both seriously, and it's a joy to be around.
Yeah, I'm sure. The atmosphere in Soica, what can that now mean to your players now that you made this turn, especially in the conference play?
Well, I think the thing that we get here, and it actually goes kind of both ways, is that not only is it great for us at home and that we get good support and it can get vocal, especially when you're not playing well, and it can kind of lift you up, but I think the downside of that is when you go look at our attendance for a home game versus the rest of the league, a lot of times, and I say it's a lot of times, almost every time we'll have more people in our game than the rest of them combined. So at the same time, other teams come in here, they get excited too, because there's a good crowd, there's energy in the building. And so you got to raise your level of performance.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Navy coming up Wednesday at 7, and then it'll be Holy Cross Saturday at 2. Hopefully it'll be a great turnout for both. Wish you nothing but the best. I was very impressed when I saw your team. Obviously, the one game I had a chance to do earlier in the year, and I've got a feeling you guys are going to do pretty well. Good luck to you this week.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I look forward to talking to you again very soon. That's Nathan Davis. What a job he does as that basketball coach at Bucknell. And they're 2-0 right now. That's a great start in the conference, in the Patriot. We will come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. We've already had our suit moment today. Suit actually believes there are 64 quality NFL quarterbacks out there.
Well, I don't think that's what he was suggesting. In the conversation that we had, what he was suggesting was along the lines of, will general managers, head coaches, and whatnot kind of adjust their game planning or the way that they go about doing things based on what has happened in the league this year. Because if you look at certain teams, especially in our area right here in Pennsylvania, the Eagles were greatly affected by the fact that their starting quarterback got, you know, basically beat up all year long. And then at the most inopportune time, ninth play of the game, he's knocked out of a playoff game. And then across the state in Pittsburgh, they had literally a carnival car of quarterbacks this year. So, like, you know, at what point do you just say, okay, well, we're going to try and invest in a backup plan, especially as your quarterback, especially when you're, especially when your starting quarterbacks are the young ones on the rookie deal.
Who?
Well, the players that we just mentioned. You mentioned them. I would rather have Ryan Fitzpatrick in that game yesterday than Josh McCown. I would rather have Teddy Bridgewater in that game, and they're going to cost a little more, and you're going to game plan differently, and that's the other portion of it.
You can't afford them. You want to know why you can't afford them? Because you're paying your starter $20
million. Right. Well, it depends who you're...
Okay? That's the big difference. Okay? The reason the Eagles could afford Nick Foles was that Carson Wentz was on a rookie contract.
Right.
Once these quarterbacks graduate to a full contract, you can't afford the backup quarterback you're talking about. You can't.
Well, maybe they should start drafting. Okay. Maybe they should start drafting earlier then.
What helped the Seahawks be a two-time Super Bowl team with a win? Russell Wilson was playing on a third-round contract, which meant they could get a free agent in Bobby Averill. They could get a free agent in Percy Harvin, even though Harvin really only played the Super Bowl for them. But they invested all that money in other players because they had their quarterback on a third-round deal. Once your quarterback graduates to the major league contract, and this is what's going to happen. This one, if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, you've got to be looking at Dak Prescott. They take up so much of the cap space. You're not sitting there saying, we're going to spend a lot of money on a backup quarterback. You're looking around saying, whoever backs up, I got to get other players other places. That's the big problem. Plus, there are not 32 of these guys out there.
Well, maybe that's the adjustment that needs to be made. Maybe these teams need to look into drafting a quarterback in the fifth round, and not a starter, but as a backup, and start grooming
him. That's what the Steelers did with Mason Rudolph. He's not good enough. Okay, yeah. that's what the Eagles did with Nate Sudfeld.
That's a good point. Yeah, okay? I guess you're right.
Teams are doing that.
It might not be. There might not be a solution.
The problem is there are not 32 of them out there. First of all, there aren't 32 big-time starters in the league, let alone 32 big-time backups. And you have veterans that don't want to be a backup quarterback. Do you think Andy Dalton wants to be a backup quarterback?
But he might not have a choice. Not. But he might not have a choice.
But he doesn't want to be.
Well, of course he doesn't.
Nick Foles did not want to be a backup quarterback. In fact, Nick Foles was ready to exit the league, period. He was ready to leave.
And that might be what happens.
Right? But, I mean, I'm saying he was ready to leave the league before Philadelphia signed him.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm talking before Philadelphia signed him. Like, Brian Hoyer has competent moments, but he's not a starter.
No, he's not.
Hey, okay, and that's the realm. That's all over this league. Ryan Fitzpatrick can bail you and always has been for a couple games. But that's it. The Redskins got in trouble because they did get a bona fide starter. And then, of all things, he got one of the worst injuries you could get. Right? Which then meant they were back into backupville.
That was Theismanville is what that was.
When you get into backupville and it lasts a long period of time like it did with the Steelers this year, you aren't going to make the playoffs. Because there just aren't enough guys out there.
Do you think
Roethlisberger will be back next year.
You think he's coming back next year? You think Rivers comes back next year?
If not with the Chargers, with somebody. Rivers is not done playing.
Really?
Yes.
You think Rivers Brady comes back?
Yes.
And you think Manning comes back somewhere?
Not so sure about that one.
Interesting.
Not so sure.
Because those are like the four Hall of Famers playing right now. And then Drew Brees, he'll definitely come back, right?
Yeah, Brees has already said he's coming back.
Yeah, okay. So,
but you look at what, for example, what the Vikings have done, investing all that guaranteed money in Kirk Cousins. Well, the reason they invested all that money in Kirk Cousins is that they know that in order to do anything, you've got to have somebody that at least gets game speed in the NFL. And did they overpay for Kirk Cousins? Yes.
But it's also very interesting in the NFL today. The top four teams in passing this year in the NFL, in passing yards, all failed to make the playoffs.
Yep, that's true.
The top four teams in rushing yardage all made the playoffs. So balance is still a part of what's going on in the league. But you look at, for example, Josh Allen. Josh Allen's the starter in Buffalo, but he's not a top-end quarterback. He's not a top-end guy at this point. And yet, I mean, Ryan Tannehill.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades because they've had the ability to find the right insurance so you're completely covered. And also, they've been able to find the best price. Huge. Let's face it. I mean, that is a big, big part of this, finding the right price. And when you look at Purdy Insurance, they do that. They want to make sure you're completely covered. They also want to make sure that that it fits your budget. And if anything ever happens, they make sure that they go to work as if it happened to them. Can't ask for better than that. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, Penn State basketball. I know that Scott Weibel sent a very thoughtful message to us on our Facebook page. And appreciate that, Scott, very much about the game. He was at the game on Saturday. He listens to the broadcast all the time. He really wanted to know essentially what did Dick and I have to say about the game. And we were obviously depth played a huge role for Penn State. There are a couple things that played a huge role for Penn State. Number one, what made a big difference for Penn State in the game was depth and the crowd. Dick and I had said, Scott, in the first half of the game, because, I mean, and Scott, you know by being in the building how hot it was. It was over 80 degrees on the floor. And we felt that Penn State, because of the depth, we thought the last 5 to 7 minutes of the game, we thought it would start to show. So as the game's playing out, and it's going back and forth, it's a game that featured 24 lead changes and 10 ties. 24 lead changes and 10 ties. That's how good this game was. Iowa played terrific. Penn State played terrific. Game was well officiated. Everything. And the guy I kept looking at, I know a lot of people kept looking at Garza, and I figured Garza would wear down a little bit because Garza was playing a lot of minutes. He was really, I mean, you're on the floor, I can see how much he was sweating, and he was a lot. But I also felt that it was Kreener was the guy I was looking at because Kreener's not used to playing those kind of minutes. And he had the 8 first half points. And he was 3 of 3. You notice he didn't hit a single shot after that? I think as the game went, he got tired. He got more tired. He got more tired. Meanwhile, Brockington kept coming at them like a freight train. Brockington scored 23 and did not have a single three-point make in the game. That's unusual to get 23 today. I mean, that's unusual to get 23 and not have that happen. And I think that that is tells you a lot about him. And also Curtis Jones. Curtis Jones has come up big. Has now come up big in the Syracuse game when they needed him. He's come up big in the Alabama game when they needed him. He came up big in the Iowa game when they needed him. And then John Harrah had 6 rebounds. And Seth Lundy came off the bench and played really well. Lundy's fine, by the way. A lot of people wondered because he went down at one point, and he did come back in the game. It's the depth where it turns out that the bench players for Penn State actually outscored the starters, 46-43. And that's where the depth came in. At the end, Iowa Garza finally got tired at the end. And Kreener was out of gas at the end. They run that high-low stuff, and Kreener could barely move his feet. Just because he's tired because of the heat. Penn State, meanwhile, was fresh, and Penn State made all the big plays down the stretch. Penn State outscored Iowa 26-13, essentially. Because that last three-point shot by Toussaint at the wire was meaningless, so 26-16 with that three-point shot in the last 6 minutes of the game, and really it was 26-13 because Toussaint just fired up a three at the end and made it. That's because Penn State was the fresher team, and plus Penn State, and we've talked about this in football. You notice in the Iowa game with the offensive line and Noah Kane, they closed the game. In the Michigan game with K.J. Hamler and company, they closed the game. Essentially in the Cotton Bowl when they needed to close the game, and they went on that, what, five-minute drive there. They didn't close it out, but they ate up all but like 40 seconds. They essentially closed that out too. Well, that's what's happening in basketball. Your ability to close the game. Miles Dredd went 6-for-6 at the free throw line to close the game. Mike Watkins had the slam dunk, put them in front 81-79. Penn State's last 6 points were Miles Dredd free throws. And that's closing. And and Penn State was able to close it. The crowd was phenomenal. Penn State football, through performance, winning, and also an entertaining, fun style of play, has earned their 110,000 fans. Penn State wrestling, through its performance, its championships, and its style of wrestling, was the single most entertaining style in all of collegiate wrestling. It's not even close because Cale promotes that. Has earned every sellout. Penn State men's ice hockey, through its performance, its style of play, and the job Guy Gadowski's done there, they've earned their sellouts. Women's volleyball, through performance, a fun, entertaining style of play, and the job Russ Rose has done, they've earned their attendance and they've earned their sellouts.
Which I've actually watched a ton of for some reason. Yes. I am very interested in the women's volleyball. It's so awesome to watch, especially Big Ten. It's fantastic.
They've earned, all those have earned. Now Penn State men's basketball, through its performance and its style of play, because Penn State is a fun team to watch this year, they're earning their crowds. And anybody who was at that game on Saturday walked out of there and felt like not only did they see winning basketball, they saw it at a high level against another high-level team, and I would venture to say found it to be a very entertaining experience. Now, the difference is in basketball, hey, guess what? Can't sit on your laurels there for a week. You got to go back and play right away, and you got to play another really good team. You got to play Rutgers. Miles Johnson, good post player. Long, good footwork. Had 18 and 14 in Nebraska. Yeboah, the transfer from Stony Brook, really has helped him. Good player. Young, the transfer from Texas, has been really up and down. He had 16 at Nebraska. Played really well. Caleb McConnell had been coming off the bench with Geo Baker out. Didn't miss a shot the other night. And defensively, Rutgers has played really well all season. Rutgers has held 10 of their 14 opponents under 40% from the field shooting this year. And the game tomorrow night is sold out. So they're laying in wait for the 20th-ranked Nittany Lions. Now, Penn State left Philadelphia right after the game. They did not stay in Philadelphia Saturday night. They went right to New Jersey after the game.
Poor
because
guys.
They're not in class this week.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of New Jersey.
Right. So why bother making the trip back to State College?
Oh, of course.
And then having to go again. Only one idiot did that. Oh, wait, that's me.
Well, especially with potentially bad weather tomorrow night. And there was some weather apparently overnight last night. It was probably a smart choice overall.
Well, no. So they've gone there. They've practiced there. That's fine.
They'll be comfortable.
Today now becomes a normal night before a game on the road.
Right.
I mean, that's where they are now. So essentially, they just went Saturday night. They got some rest. Then yesterday was really the one day that was where it's okay. This is unusual. Today they would have been in New Jersey anyway. In fact, they'd be there now anyway.
Maybe they went to New York City, hit some sights. Rutgers isn't that far.
I vote no. Didn't do that. They did have a team activity. They did participate all together last night. They did do something last night. But these are business trips. And can't get around. I mean, like the bowl game, business trip. I mean, that's what these all become. People ask me about, hey, what did you do when you were in a... Like, I go on these trips. I don't do anything. Because guess what? I'm not there to do anything.
You just find a good place to eat, right? Pretty much. That's like the most you can do?
I would say that 9 times out of 10, I eat in a hotel.
Oh, geez.
Well, no, but I mean, again, but these are... I mean, I'm not going to get there till 9 tonight. I'm not going to get there till 9, so I'm not going to bother doing anything except getting something at the hotel restaurant. That's fine. These are business trips. They're all... I mean, that's what it comes down to. Hey, you're going to... No, we went to Dallas, and we ate in the hotel on Thursday night, which was a terrific place. I mean, to be honest with you, the place we ate at in the hotel in Dallas is rated one of the top 10 steakhouses in Dallas to begin with.
There
so we
go.
Did that.
That's
and we did that. We did that as a group, which is fine. Friday, Jack and I went to practice. So we spent Friday at practice, went over to the stadium, the whole deal, watched it, you know, went over some notes together about what we saw, personnel-wise, things like that. And then Learfield had a dinner set up for us. At the bowl game, they always have a dinner set up for us the night before the game, with usually one of the Learfield executives and, of course, our group and everything like that. Okay, and usually a couple of primary sponsors. It turned out, though, that for me on that Friday, I went to practice, and I was supposed to do the pregame show with James at 4:50. But because we got back from practice late, see, what they wanted to do was they wanted James to meet the TV people, and then when he was done with the TV people and the national radio people, he was then going to do the pregame with me. We got back so late, he could only meet with the TV people and the national radio people. Like Brad Sham, I had a chance to talk to him. Because I talked to Brad on Saturday, and he had met with James. And So he asked if I could move back to 8:15. So what I did was I went to the dinner at 6:30, but I left at quarter of eight. So I was there for an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes. You know, they stayed till like 9:30. But I went back to the hotel because I had to get James, because that's my job. That's, you know, don't anybody, I'm just saying, these are business trips.
Right.
So the business was, look, I have to get this. So I went back and took care of that, then went back to my room, got up early, went to the stadium, did the game. As soon as the game was over, I went to the airport and was on a charter on the way back to State College because they had basketball the next day. So these are business trips. And I know you have to loosen things up a little bit when there are extended stays for the players. I do understand that. That's why I had a team activity schedule last night. But the reality is, I mean, hey, let's go have a good time. We went to Brooklyn, right, for the tournament. Hey, what'd you do in Brooklyn? Two games.
I mean, I figured at your advanced age at this point, you just wanted to smell the roses, you know, and like take all that in.
You know what? It's never been. You know what? That's never been my style of things. Have I gone places? And for example, it was interesting leaving Philadelphia Saturday night, and we're crawling in traffic to get out. Coming down, there was no problem. We're crawling traffic to get out. Well, it's funny because I said to Bob Taylor, our engineer, because Bob went with me. I said, you know, the funny thing is, I said, we looked over in the buildings. I said, there's Liberty 1, Liberty 2. I said, the Comcast building's now the biggest building there. And Independence Hall is down near the Comcast building. Near it, you know. I said, you know, the funny thing is, I said, the first time I ever went to Philadelphia for a game was back in 1981. And I said, you know what? I said, I went over to Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell. I said, I always wanted to see it. I said, and you know what? That's the last time I ever went to it.
Well, because how many times do you have to see the Liberty Bell?
No, I'm just saying, though.
I lived in New York City, and I think I've only been to the Statue of Liberty like twice.
Right.
I grew up there.
Right. But I'm just saying that that's what these get to be.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to make it. There's nothing mundane about it.
Right.
The job's exciting. The games are exciting. And to me, travel is check into the hotel, get something to eat, watch some game film with the coaches or whatever, or you know, or talk to them or whatever it may be. Get up the next day, breakfast, go to shoot around, whatever. Football, get there, we'll get a bite to eat. Next day, get up, get on the team bus, go to the stadium, do the game, get on the plane, come back.
I guess that's a product of loving your job.
It's as efficient as I want it to be.
Yeah.
Because because of the way we travel, I spend less time away from home. I have a great job that takes me all over the place, but also I spend less time away from home. We did have what's the one tourist attraction in Dallas?
Cows.
No.
Cowboys.
It's obviously where President Kennedy was shot.
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay. Which everybody went. Well, I've already been there three times.
Yeah.
Okay. Twice. I've only been there twice. So people are like, I was giving people directions how to get there. Seriously, I was.
That's a weird thing to give directions to. This is where the president was killed.
No, but I know. People said, you know how to get to Dealey Plaza. I said, yeah, I know how to get there from here.
Excuse me, sir. You know where the president was shot? Yeah. So you go down, you make a left. Like, that's a weird thing to me.
But people wanted to go over.
Oh, I understand. I'm just saying, right? It's a weird thing.
So we get our press passes at the Omni Hotel. And 6 years ago, Dick Girardi was put into the Basketball Writers Hall of Fame. So I flew down for it. And it was in the Omni. All right. And we come out of the Omni, and the Cotton Bowl courtesy driver was terrific. He was very nice. Took us over. Now he's bringing us back, and he makes a left, and I said, oh my God, we're on Elm Street. And Jack looks over at me, and Jack knows what I mean. The other people are like, what? I said, we're on Elm Street. And the guy says, yeah, we're going to go right over the X. I'm like, you know, we're like, hey, excuse me, can we make this any more eerie?
Oh. Everybody duck and cover.
Well,
You never know when someone's going to be gunning for Steve Jones. Let's be real.
No. But let me give you one very quickly. I get in the elevator to come down after I get in the hotel. And I had to go down to the second floor of the meeting rooms for something. So I hit the button. I get nothing. Right? I hit the button. It goes off. I'm like, what's going on here? So I hit it one more time. I thought, well, maybe I should take the stairs. I mean, it doesn't seem like this is working. Well, finally it does come down. The doors open up. There are four police officers in there. Right? And a fifth individual who has his arms behind his back. I'm in there looking around going, okay, this isn't good. And I've got this Penn State jacket on to pull over. And they said, hey, said, you here for the game? I said, yeah, I do the game. And I do the games. They said, hey, yeah, we loved you on the Cotton Bowl. I'm like going, okay. then they explained to me that all their kids went to Penn State and they've gone to games and they've seen the pregame.
Nice.
Right? I said to Sandy Barber, I said, at least the person in cuffs didn't say it. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right, with you tomorrow from New Jersey. As Penn State plays Rutgers tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we're on beginning at 6:30. Our show tomorrow from Jersey from 3 to 5. Thanks for being here today, Chris.
Hey, it's a pleasure. I'll try not to lose any money overnight, so I'll be in a better mood tomorrow.
No, I think there's a bowl game tonight, and I think you're probably cooked.
No, we got hockey and NBA, so that's what I have to turn my attention to now. So,
hockey in the NBA?
Yeah, parlays, baby. You don't know how much a four-game parlay pays off. It's nice.
You're right. I have no clue.
See you tomorrow, man.
Today's show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury.